TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Nuclear Y2K Symposium, March 8, 1999, part 4 of a series of 4. Y2K and nuclear weapons. What happens to the global arsenals of nuclear weapons when the clocks turn on December 31st of this year? The issue of Y2K opens up a fascinating and frightening glimpse into the huge arsenals of nuclear weapons that are still on hair trigger alert in the US and Russia. Today we take a look at the highly computerized early warning systems. Computer glitches have already led to several false alerts, and preparations to launch nuclear missiles were begun. Even the Pentagon acknowledges that thousands of Y2K computer problems reside in the satellite and radar early warning systems. A solution that is considered by the US and Russian governments is to share the early warning information. Today's speakers warn against this solution. Michael Craig and Stephen Young are both with BASIC, the British American Security Information Council. They recommend that nuclear weapons be de-alerted, that's taken off of launch on warning. This program and the printed materials we offer gives you arguments how to make this happen. Here first is Michael Craig. We recorded him on Capitol Hill in March of 1999. The Nuclear Y2K Symposium was co-sponsored by Dr. Helen Caldicott, Senator Tom Harkin, and Dan Plesch, Director of BASIC. Michael Craig.
Relying on the sharing of early warning information to address Y2K is in fact endorsing the current strategy by increasing our mutual dependence, Russia and U.S. dependence, on the very early warning networks that have in fact shown historical propensity for periodic computer accidents that were completely unpredictable in advance by the very engineers that built the systems. And I guess I'd like to share a quote in that regard given by a computer scientist concerned with launch and warning back in 1987 in a book on devoted to computers and security issues. This programmer said, "Sometimes it seems that we in the 20th century have evolved a special skill for creating situations that have no plausible outcome." Y2K has shown that statement to be true 12 years later, and personally I agree with Bruce that de-alerting is the only plausible outcome. The Shared Early Warning Center does not undermine the validity of that quote. Moving on to individual systems. NORAD has in fact, a piece of good news, begun and completed some part of the validation stage, some of the huge battlefield level, mission level operational evaluations for early warning systems, for early warning network. And this was in some radars were tested piecemeal, ground-based radars in December. The full operational evaluations were in the last 2 weeks of February. They started out by looking comprehensively at all the radars and all the satellites, and more importantly, I think for Y2K, the banks of computers on the ground that are responsible for transmitting and collating information. You have Cheyenne Mountain or NORAD's mission, and here you have within that block literally millions, tens of millions of lines of code for receiving data, breaking it down, correlating it, fusing it, etc. And to give you an idea of the complexity there, a test, non-Y2K test of early warning computer at Cheyenne Mountain about 2 years ago broke just 25 or 30 dots on the radar, simulated missile attacks in their simulated test, into hundreds of thousands of separate messages or pieces of information and then fused it back together for meaningful observation by humans looking at computer screens. So we're talking about very complex systems. And then finally, they tested NORAD's ability to relay this information, this analyzed, fused information, to command posts responsible for actually deciding on launch orders and acting upon launch orders, or are ordering deployed forces to launch. And that includes Strategic Command in Omaha, the National Military Command Center in Northern Virginia, and the Pentagon. Yes, Canada is also involved in this network, and a couple other end users I won't go into. Bottom line, what were the results? No Y2K anomalies were turned up in these tests. They used four, however, they didn't use the full list of dates. I've seen pages of at least 10 Y2K sensitive dates, i.e. not just the rollover, but things like the leap year or September 9th, 1999. They selected only the four main dates for whatever reason. But there is some bad news in the way of gaps in the testing. You should be aware of. First of all, according to Senate testimony by a colonel speaking for NORAD, these tests included only, quote, the thin line, the minimal number of systems required to execute the mission. And that's a rather cryptic statement. And what it means is that no basic infrastructure was included, and such as utilities, power companies. Also, it looks like they left out some non-mission critical systems, and this includes also telecommunications. No private company lines were included in the test, and that's significant because nuclear operations depend, believe it or not, on Ma Bell and AT&T. And the DOD is having trouble actually getting assurances from utility companies and telecommunications companies. Not, the utilities are no surprise given this morning's session regarding nuclear power. And one last point, two major ground-based radar arrays are back in the repair stage because it was shown that their Y2K patch, although successful, created all sorts of other problems with the original software, and they have to create a new bridge between the Y2K fix and the original code. Something that was not included was the ability of Trident submarines to receive messages with Y2K dates, problem dates. And in fact, although the Navy has said that it's about to begin testing of Trident-wide systems at the dock, simulated tests of everything the Trident, from weapons to propulsion to sonar navigation, in the appendices of the quarterly report, it clearly shows that the communication systems across all frequencies need to be fixed yet. Extremely high frequency, very low frequency, I won't go into the differences between them, but the terminals and the subs need to be completely replaced by the Navy's admission, and new operating systems put in place, new software, new everything. And one of the reasons they say this is they're relying on existing modernization plans. The Navy's had modernization plans for the Tridents for several years now. It's been slowly implementing. My concern is that they won't be able to implement these modernization programs by 2000. We'll have to wait and see. also, general Navy communications and satellite access software is behind as well. And on a more general level, the Navy has consistently been the one most behind on Y2K repairs. And so that's a hole that hasn't been addressed yet. For policy recommendations, I guess I would say beyond the obvious, which we've been hammering on all day, of de-alerting, don't depend on tests, which don't show up all errors across the board. I would intermediate policy recommendations: utilize what's called dependency modeling to find the true network of mission-critical systems for nuclear operations. This would bring in a sort of horizontally as well as vertically things such as utility companies, fuel supplies for backup, power backup systems, and private telecommunications networks. Also, it should be clear that any non-mission critical systems that might be interfacing with mission critical should be included in tests. And the DOD should simply provide more context or meaning to its reports to Congress. As I said, right now as it stands, it takes a fair amount of specialized knowledge to decipher the reports as they're handed to the Office of Management and Budget and others, to the Armed Services Committee, and there are experts that exist in those institutions, but there's also a lot of generalists that are receiving these reports and don't necessarily know what to make of some of the evidence given. And a final note, I guess, a broader critique of the focus on testing. No software test in existence ever, period, if you're talking about truly complex systems with tens or hundreds or millions of lines of code, software code, no test has ever exercised every single branching in such a complex software program or system of systems, if you want to look at the entire NORAD complex. Generally, the more complex the program, the less likely it is that the tests are going to be as exhaustive and as comprehensive as they should be. And history has shown this for NORAD. NORAD has, for many years now, had annual operational evaluations. Y2K evaluations are basically just a tacked-on version or an extended version of normal annual practices. And yet, despite these dedicated testing programs, there is a history of software errors, embedded chip errors, in the U.S., even going outside of nuclear operations. The whole history of computer accidents generally, from AT&T to banking to NORAD, shows that computer errors are inherently unpredictable in their nature. And so I think, as I said in my press statement, that relying on these systems as if they'll be 100% fixed is a Band-Aid. It treats the symptoms. A more plausible policy or policy with a more plausible outcome would be if we had true, serious consideration of de-alerting.
That was Michael Craig. He spoke at the Y2K Symposium on Capitol Hill in March of 1999. Stephen Young is the next speaker. Both are working with the highly respected think tank BASIC, the British American Security Information Council. Stephen Young.
I'll begin with a brief summary of the arsenals of the other nuclear weapons states, China, France, the UK, and what we know about their Y2K programs and problems. Outside of the U.S., the most is known about the U.K. and French weapons programs and Y2K programs. The U.K. has only one nuclear weapons system remaining in its arsenal. It's the Trident submarine, and the Trident submarine launched ballistic missile. The U.K. has three of these submarines and is planning to put a fourth in operation sometime this year. On those four submarines will be less than 200 warheads, and it making it the smallest arsenal among the five nuclear weapons states. Most interestingly, the UK is the only country to declare that its forces are day-to-day not on high alert status. Last year, as part of a comprehensive defense review, the British stated that their nuclear armed forces were, as they put it, routinely on a notice to fire measured in days rather than the few minutes quick reaction alert sustained throughout the Cold War. However, the UK has made very clear that this status is not de-alerting, not the option that Bruce and others have prescribed to reduce dangers. For them, it's merely a confidence-building step, and in their view, reduces the likelihood of accident. That is all well and good, but it does little to reassure other countries that indeed the UK arsenal is not on alert, and there's nothing to prevent the UK arsenal from going back on alert at any time with no warning. For its early warning data, the UK depends almost entirely on the US. The UK operates one US-owned ground-based radar on UK territory, and it gets data directly from that radar. It also gets data from the U.S. systems, satellites, and early warning radars, but it does not get that data directly. It is filtered through a variety of U.S. systems, And it is this kind of data that would probably be provided to Russia in the center that Mike and Bruce mentioned. So if indeed there are any problems in the U.S. early warning systems as a result of Y2K, the U.K. would have the same problems. The U.K.'s military Y2K effort to try and solve Y2K bug problems is quite substantial. According to their statistics, there are some 30,000 military systems to examine, and out of those, about 1,000 systems have been deemed mission critical for crucial air operations, logistical support, joint command capabilities, and the nuclear deterrent. If you look at the British MOD reports on Y2K progress, they appear to be about 6 months behind the U.S. in getting their systems past the repair stage and into the testing process. As they put it, there's a shortage of skilled in-house staff has been identified as a potential risk to the program across MOD. In other words, they don't have the people to fix the problems and are having to try to hire consultants from outside to help solve all their Y2K problems. Second question is about the timeliness of the British effort and its reliance on the U.S. As most of you know, the U.K. buys its nuclear missiles, the Trident missile, from the U.S. Thus, it also is going to depend on the U.S. for Y2K corrections for Trident missiles and related systems. As the U.S. Navy is the service most behind in its Y2K repairs, one would think that the U.K. would be quite worried on this issue. In fact, according to at least one table from the DoD, there is at least one Trident system that will only be fixed by having a workaround, basically a temporary solution, put in place by December 15th of this year, i.e. 2 weeks before the millennium. So if the U.S. has to do that for its systems by December 15th, it also has to tell that to the U.K. as well. That does not leave a lot of room for error. And that's about all we know about the U.K. On the French have a larger arsenal than the U.K., and it includes at least two weapon systems. First, like the U.K., it has four ballistic missile submarines. They have approximately 450 warheads total in their arsenal. Of those, the vast majority are on those four submarines. The second system is what's called an air-launched air-to-ground missile, ASMP, or Air Sol Moyen Porté, that has about 60 warheads. The French have not said publicly, in the same way the UK has, the status of alert level for their systems, but it is generally believed that they are not on the same high-level alert maintained by the US and Russia. The French Ministry of Defense, as you would expect, also has a sizable Y2K program. It has a five-part effort, looking first at a survey of what systems needed to be examined. Second phase of the project was an evaluation stage of what needed to be done with each system. That was supposed to be completed by September of last year, but it was not finished until December. It's never a good sign when you miss one of your first goals of a project. The third stage is correction. The fourth stage is validation, ensuring that the correction fixed the problem. You may have mentioned this morning that during a Y2K, that as part of a Y2K fixes for a U.S. nuclear power plant, they were doing a test on the system, and as part of the test, everything shut down. All computer screens went blank. For 7 hours, they tried to figure out what had gone wrong, and it turned out simply that someone had put in the dates in the computer system itself rather than the test module. It just shows that even trying to fix Y2K problems, the testing validation stage is critical and very difficult. According to the French, they hope to have validation completed only by October of this year, which obviously leaves very little time for additional solutions if problems are still develop. A few words about China. China has roughly 400 nuclear warheads in its arsenal on a variety of systems, most of which are quite old and have very limited capability. According to best estimates, there are about 10 so-called intercontinental or long-range ballistic missiles that might be able to hit the U.S. Experts believe that these 10 missiles or so are liquid-fueled and are kept with their tanks empty, i.e. not ready for launch. In other words, de-alerted. India and Pakistan, even fewer words. Both India and Pakistan, our newest nuclear weapon states, are trying to weaponize their small arsenals. India might have enough materials for 200 weapons. Pakistan might have enough for 20 weapons. Yet neither has fully developed long-range missiles of any kind. Both are developing missiles that could hit each other, and in India's case, developing missiles to hit China. The status of their Y2K programs is also unknown, but presumably fairly limited. And just a brief mention as well of Israel, they presumably have an arsenal of around 200 nuclear weapons, and their Y2K status also is unknown. What will we do? Bruce described the need for de-alerting, and that's something that the government should pursue. But there's another option, and this is something we should consider as well, I think. In the UK, the government's Y2K program has threatened to shut down companies that fall behind in their Y2K compliance programs. The headline from the Wire report reads, "Britain threatens Y2K bug laggards with closure." Now, unfortunately, this statement applies. This statement came out of the UK's Action 2000 program and is directed at health and safety inspections of private British companies. One wonders whether they would consider taking the same steps for the nuclear arsenal if need be. I somehow doubt it. So where do we stand? As Bruce and Mike mentioned, there are efforts in the U.S. to try and create some plans for reducing the dangers, particularly around the Y2K change of date, and I want to talk a little bit more about those. The original plan, agreed last September, or sorry, September 97 by Yeltsin and Clinton, was to create a joint warning center that was going to be built in Russia and that would share data from U.S. and Russian early warning systems. The agreement was vague, and they had some problems working out all the details, and they, as of yet, haven't got them all worked out. They're still trying to do that, but as of now, there's no way that system will be ready for the Y2K millennium turnover. So as a temporary substitute, the U.S. has proposed, and Russia has not yet accepted, this idea of a center for Y2K strategic stability based in the U.S. Now, the problem is that Russia would have no way of knowing whether or not U.S. data coming into that facility would be accurate or not. Obviously, that data needs to be filtered in some ways, but the question is, how can Russia know whether or not that they're seeing on those screens is in fact accurate? I want to make a very simple proposal, I think, that helps address, though, some of that problem. And the proposal would be that the U.S. place on each of its missile silos place a camera that can watch the silo cover, and that camera would take a live videotape, and that videotape would then be directly beamed in to Russian viewers. So Russia actually could watch U.S. missile silos 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year long. I don't know if it's been proposed or not, but I think it's an interesting concept. You could even put the data up on the web and everybody watch it. But simply that, the U.S. has approximately about 550 silos strewn across the U.S. If each silo has one camera with continuous feed, it's a lot of effort, but it can be done for a few million dollars at most. The problem is that does not address SLBMs, submarine launch missiles, where most U.S. systems are. There are other steps we should be taking. One thing we could do is not make the situation worse. The U.S. is planning to put so-called D-5 warheads on all of our Trident missiles, the Trident submarine-based missiles. The D-5s have greater yield, are more accurate, and better able to attack silos than the C-4. In military terminology, they have hard target kill capability. If we simply decide not to put D-5 warheads on those missiles, we both reduce the threat to Russia's arsenal and save money. Reducing the threat to Russia's arsenal makes sense because it lessens the pressure on Russia to launch its missiles early. If we attack with D-5s, the Russians have no assurance that any of their ICBMs will survive, so they have to launch theirs or lose theirs. If we attack with C-4s, we increase Russian confidence that at least a few of their missiles might survive, and thus they can ride out the attack. Of course, we won't attack, but Russia does not know that, and that's the key principle you need to think about. What's Russia thinking on this? What are the pressures on Russia for the situation? A second option, and for this I'm grateful to Ted Postol at MIT, we for the U.S. to provide financial aid to allow Russia to launch new generation early warning satellites. Dr. Postol estimates that it would cost between $50 and $70 million per year to launch and operate 6 new satellites that would greatly improve Russia's own early warning capabilities. At present, the only immediate threat to U.S. survival is the accidental or mistaken Russian launch. Y2K makes the whole situation worse. If the Russian government takes a sharp turn for the worse, more dangers appear. Thus, anything the U.S. can do to reduce those dangers, to increase Russian confidence in their survivability of their arsenal and in the capability of their early warning systems, is in our interest more than anyone else's. One point the CBO study makes, almost in passing, is well worth mentioning, and I will conclude with it here. All the early warning in the world is not as useful as reducing the size of nuclear arsenals. As long as both the U.S. and Russia continue to maintain huge nuclear arsenals on high alert, the world, and the U.S. in particular, faces annihilation. It would come, most likely, through mistake, through miscalculation, through bad data. Just the kind of errors that will almost be inevitable due to the Y2K bug. It's not too late to act. In fact, we must act. We must act now. Thank you.
That was Stephen Young from BASIC, the British-American Security Information Council. He spoke at a Y2K symposium on Capitol Hill in March of 1999. The full one-hour tape of Nuclear Weapons and Y2K is $10. A transcript and 15 pages of information is $8. If you want both the tape and transcript, send us $15. Send the correct amount to TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141. That's TUC Radio, Box 410009, San Francisco, California, 94141, USA. For a credit card order, call TUC Radio toll-free at 1-877-TUC-TAPE. That's 877-TUC-TAPE. The music is by G.S. Sarstev. My name is Mariah Gelarden. Thank you for listening.